More urging from the corporate world.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. The biggest company in the world that's not a bank is also shouting for a bailout of the financial system. This morning, a spokesman for GE called on Congress to get her done and quickly before the economy goes into a tailspin. The Senate is expected to vote tonight on a new rescue package. It's a 450-page bill so far, and here's what's in it. It adds the FDIC insurance element we talked about yesterday, so accounts with $250,000 in them would be covered by the FDIC. And it gives the SEC power to suspend an important accounting rule, mark-to-market accounting. Some believe suspending that rule will go a long way to unfreezing the credit markets, but some accounting firms say it will hurt investors. Also in the bill, some new things that have nothing to do with the bailout. Our man in Washington, Steve Henn, continues our coverage of the financial crisis.
All these treats are meant to pick up votes from both Republicans and Democrats who are sitting on the fence. There's a package of tax cuts for solar power and wind farms, cost $17 billion. The bill fixes the alternative minimum tax, which, left unchanged, would hike taxes next year on millions of middle-class Americans, cost $62 billion. There are also another $42 billion in treats, tax breaks for teachers and charities, too. There's another tax incentive for investment in Washington, D.C., and a provision that forgives interest and penalties for folks who underpaid their taxes when exercising their stock options. The total cost of the goodies is $120 billion, pushing the bill for this bailout up to $820 billion. In Washington, I'm Steve Henn for Marketplace.
I'd say the best word to describe the stock markets right now is nervous. The Dow is down another 112 points this morning to 10,737. The Nasdaq has fallen 8. The S&P 500 is down 13. In Asia today, the markets closed about 1% higher. London shares are up 2% so far. The main argument for a government bailout is to avoid a deep recession. If there's no credit available, businesses might collapse, jobs would be lost, people couldn't buy cars or houses or send their kids to college. Commentator Robert Reich says one group of people might suffer the most.
If you're an early boomer over the age of 55, you may be in even bigger trouble, bailout or no bailout. In an economic crisis, many employers lay off older workers first because their seniority makes them more expensive. And studies document that older workers who lose their jobs face more difficulties finding new ones. That's not your only problem. The house you've been living in for 25 or 30 years and were planning to cash in for retirement is worth far less now than the last time you looked. So is that 401k plan you were counting on. And you don't have enough time before retirement to make up for these losses. Certainly not enough time to reap the gains you expected between now and then. If the economic crisis is as bad as some predict, housing prices and share values might not bounce back for 5 years or more. Japan's meltdown took 10 years to correct. We early boomers, and note I said we, because, sadly, I'm one of you, once had all the advantages. We entered the housing market in the 1970s and 80s when houses were still cheap and reaped the gains when late boomers came into the market and pushed prices up. We also got the plum jobs because we were the first into the post-industrial economy before the boomers who followed us. And many of us got into the stock market early on and rode that great wave. So maybe now we're paying the price for our good fortune then. But that doesn't make this any less painful.
Robert Reich's book, Super Capitalism, is now in paperback. This is the Morning Report for Wednesday, October 1st on Marketplace.org. President Bush just signed a bill that will give $25 billion in loans to American car makers. The money's supposed to go toward making more fuel-efficient cars. But I wouldn't expect to see any new ones coming out. Sarah Gardner explains from our sustainability desk.
U.S. automakers face falling revenues and mountains of debt. Business professor Peter Morisi says these loans simply help the big three pay down some debt and make the smaller, more fuel-efficient cars they've already planned, like GM's all-electric Chevy Volt.
They don't have time to develop new prototypes. That would take 4 to 5 years. To get something on the shelf, they have to rely on what they have, and they're already moving forward.
But government red tape could delay these loans for months. Auto analyst David Healy at Burnham Securities says the industry can afford to wait a bit.
Even GM in a tough market can get through 09, so they don't need the money this morning.
Critics of the Chrysler bailout in 1979 complain it enabled business as usual. But auto expert David Cole says it's too late for American automakers to renege on cleaner cars. New fuel economy standards are looming, beginning in the 2011 model year. I'm Sarah Gartner for Marketplace.
Europeans will be watching closely the Senate vote tonight on the revised bailout package. This week alone, European governments have rescued 5 banks, and they're worried more could go down. But the leaders of Europe say they need the U.S. to step up here and make something happen. Megan Williams has more.
When the bill failed in the House, reaction in Europe was disappointment and irritation. Many here say the crisis was triggered by the U.S., and they're the ones who should fix it. RBC credit analyst Hank Calenti.
As far as Europe is concerned, most officials here believe that the financial weapons of mass destruction reside in the U.S. Not passing the bill could result in a self-fulfilling prophecy for continued distress in some EU financial markets.
In the meantime, the head of the EU Trade Commission and several leaders want the U.S. to organize a world conference to hammer out new financial rules and reform economic institutions. I'm Megan Williams for Marketplace.
Multinational banks aren't the only ones having trouble getting money. As banks stop lending to each other, they've stopped lending to customers. Here's more from Stacey Vanek Smith.
A couple weeks ago, Jessica Eustace got a letter from her bank.
The notice said, under current business conditions, we have to freeze your equity line.
That experience is becoming quite common, says personal finance expert Jordan Goodman.
Home equity lines are being cut back dramatically because the value of the homes are falling. That's part of the credit crunch kind of hitting Main Street.
And it's a big hit. Goodman says a lot of people have come to rely on home equity.
People have been using home equity credit to meet their basic expenses.
Credit cards are seizing up as well. These days it's harder to qualify for a card. Take Dan Ouellette. He lost his job and his house and has had trouble getting money ever since.
There's no way I could apply for a credit card. There's absolutely no way I could qualify for one.
Personal finance expert Goodman says financial institutions are making the situation worse by raising interest rates and minimum payments. And he says even if the markets get a bailout from Congress, it will likely be a long time before people can get easy access to credit again. I'm Stacey Vanek Smith for Marketplace.
And yet another consequence of the credit freeze, we're not seeing as many startups go public. During the dot-com boom, IPOs seemed like a dime a dozen. But a new study out today says those days are well over. Mitchell Hartman reports from our entrepreneurship desk at Oregon Public Broadcasting.
Today's report from the National Venture Capital Association isn't pretty. In the third quarter, there was precisely one VC-backed initial public offering. In the second quarter, there were none. That hasn't happened for 30 years. Mark Heeson is the association's president.
Thus far, we have 6 venture-backed IPOs for the year. Normally, we should have at least 75 at this point. So 6 is something that we simply have never seen before.
An IPO is one of the ways that venture capitalists cash out on their investments. The fewer IPOs, the less willing VCs may be to invest in startups at an early stage. Heeson says launching a company that you've nurtured onto the stock market to stand on its own has always been considered a home run in the VC game, and not just because it's a moneymaker.
You have to look at what companies do when they go public. They become important corporate citizens. You know, I look at Dell and I think, what would Austin be today without Dell? What would have happened if Google or eBay had been bought instead of gone public?
But with IPOs drying up, selling out to a bigger player is often the way to go. Intel might gobble up a hot software startup. Merck could buy a company with a promising drug in clinical trials. Bob Ward runs Capybara Ventures in Portland.
Everybody's looking for a leg up on competition. Large tech really relies on the small players, on small, fast movers, innovators to provide the next generation.
And VCs have continued to funnel cash into hot fields like biotech, the internet, and clean technology. Mike Hoffman hopes some of that money will flow his way. His startup, PowerMand, develops tools to improve energy efficiency.
And it just so happens we're in one of those markets that really matters, the sustainability area. So we kind of think that if we can get past this hump of actually having revenue, that we will be a very attractive venture target.
Until the VCs agree, though, his company will just have to last a little longer on the founder's own money and funds from friends and family, usually the first investors to risk their shirts in any startup. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
Been getting a lot of emails about the financial crisis, and people still have very basic questions about the credit markets and why they're seizing up. So I thought we'd do a little primer this morning because this is important to understand. We're joined by business consultant Peter Cohen. Okay, Peter, first question, why do banks need to constantly lend to each other? Don't they have their own piles of money?
Oh, they do have a lot of money already, but the complicated thing about it is they usually use very short-term financing. That is money that they borrow for one day, and at the end of the day, they get a new loan, and they just roll it over. That's the way it normally works. And the reason that banks do that is because it's among the lowest cost ways that you can get money.
But it's not cheap right now, and that's exactly the issue here. The rate that the banks charge each other has gone up so much just in the last few weeks.
Yes. And what it basically boils down to is that banks don't want to lend to each other. They saw what happened when they lent to Bear Stearns, when they lent to Lehman Brothers. And what's happening is that instead of banks lending to each other, the Federal Reserve is stepping in and they're doing all the lending.
But what is happening to that money?
The banks are hoarding the money because they don't have enough capital. This is the fundamental cause of all this distress. The Fed has been ordering and the Treasury has been ordering them to go out and raise more capital. And they tried earlier in the year to get the money from the sovereign wealth funds over in China and the Middle East, and they made some investments, lost their money. So they're basically stuck. They can't get capital from anywhere else. So here they are going to the Fed, borrowing the money and hoarding it, and just hope that it keeps them from being wiped out.
You can probably imagine how a lot of people feel about this is they made their bed, and now they have to lie in it.
Absolutely, and it would be great if they had been responsible enough to have enough protection for what might happen if things went wrong. But unfortunately, by borrowing more and more money, they have put the entire global system at risk. So unfortunately, we have a situation where we have private profits and socialized losses.
Well, Peter, this was a very good explainer. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Scott.
Peter Cohen advises companies about their finances. We'll do our best to answer your questions. Send them to us at marketplace.org. In Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Thanks for listening and enjoy your day.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.